Welcome into the CHGO White Sox podcast presented by PointsBet. Use promo code CHGO when you sign up to get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. Welcome into the CHGO studios here in the West Loop of Chicago. I'm Sean Anderson, your host of the CHGO White Sox podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean_W_Anderson. To the far left is Vinny Duber. He's the CHGO White Sox beat reporter. You can follow him on Twitter at Vinny Duber. And the man in the middle is Herb Lawrence.
Hello.
You can follow him on Twitter at Ecknerwall23. And you can follow the show on Twitter at CHGO_White Sox. On today's episode, it is another rained out game for the Sox and the Guardians. I agree with Joe Tucci, WTF Cleveland. I was not expecting this one. Yesterday made more sense. We saw rain all throughout the day, but just due to winter weather, we are not getting a game today. This one will be made up tomorrow. So you get two Sox and Cleveland games tomorrow, and then you'll get one on Thursday as well. We'll have a post game for you after the second game of tomorrow's doubleheader, and then we will have a pre and post game for you on Thursday. So that's the new schedule now after this game was canceled. Were you guys surprised by this one, or were you guys, because you were on top of it. I mean, you're Mr. Media Alert, I'm guessing.
Mr. Media Alert?
Yeah, that's Mr. Me. Media
no,
Alert.
It's just, it's just being on Twitter at the right time is okay. Really all it comes down to. But yeah, I mean, listen, you got to expect this kind of thing for April baseball, especially when you're playing in one of the two central divisions, right? I mean, this is what happens in these parts this time of year. You fluctuate wildly between spring, summer, and winter all in 1 week, it seems sometimes. So,
did you hear it's going to be 80 degrees in Chicago on Saturday?
Yeah, yeah. Great. And lovely. I'll be getting out of town just in time to go to the mountains where it'll be 50.
So, I should have guessed that. I should have took money. Whenever someone goes on a vacation, whenever someone goes out of town, that's when the good weather comes to Chicago.
Absolutely.
In the first 4 months.
Absolutely. I mean, it literally happened to me. When I went to Nashville, it was beautiful up here. It was beautiful in Nashville, too. But
that's why I just stay, because, you know, I just...
That's why you're afraid of the weather turning good while you're gone.
We were talking today about Cleveland and St. Louis and my hatred for those places, even though I've never been, Vinny said, maybe you need to get outside a little bit more, which is true.
Right.
I will still hate them. I don't, you know.
You shouldn't. Cleveland's our all right town. Not that great. I mean, most Midwest towns for me are not great, but Cleveland is fine if you find a nice place to dine. I mean, if you like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which we'll get to some of our albums a little bit later.
Oh, yeah.
And if you like, I don't know, cheap alcohol, it's in Cleveland.
That's where they got it? That's where they're hiding it all?
It's very inexpensive to go to Cleveland and drink.
Well, good for them.
And I mean, of traffic, too. They have no traffic.
Well, that's because no one's there.
Exactly.
And that's what I found with Indianapolis as well. I went to Indianapolis. No one was there. It was 1 p.m., a very popular lunch hour. No one was in any of the restaurants. It was deserted.
Yeah.
So
I will stick up for the cities in the AL Central.
Okay.
Cleveland, Detroit, Kansas City, Minneapolis. I have positive reviews for all of them. You can keep St. Louis. You can keep Indianapolis. Yeah, no thank you.
I've been to Detroit. Fine city. It was cool. It's big. It's big like Chicago, very tall, a lot of skyscrapers. It's a very intimidating city in a way.
Rich musical history in Detroit. Yes.
I was like 11 though, so like
you couldn't appreciate it yet?
No, not yet. I wasn't really Spotify wasn't a thing yet, so gotcha. I wasn't deep into the track list, but we'll be talking about some music today. We had one person on Twitter break down our episode yesterday where we talked about music for 23 minutes. So we'll go back to the album discussion. We'll give our number 3 albums of all time. We were trying to make this a whole thing on the pregame show, but there are no pregames because there's no games. So we're just working this into the real podcast now. So we'll do our number 3 albums of all time today. We'll also talk about some new rules or rule changes to the MLB that have happened over the past couple of years. Tony La Russa commented on the change of the 7 innings to going back to 9 inning doubleheaders. So with the White Sox playing a doubleheader tomorrow, we'll talk about the doubleheaders and if they should go back to the 7 inning rule. We'll also talk about a pitch clock. It's been introduced into the minor leagues, and it has sped up games drastically, so we'll talk about what that can mean for the major leagues. And then we'll also look at the 26-man roster for the Sox. project that a little bit once this team is healthy, once Lucas Giolito's back, once A.J. Pollock's back, once Yoan Moncada's back, we will go through the 26-man roster and try to predict or at least look at who will be on this roster once it shrinks down in May, back from 28-man on the roster to 26. But should we jump into the album talk here, guys? Yesterday, Vinny went with Born to Run from Bruce Springsteen. Herb went with Asia from Steely Dan. I went with Tusk from Fleetwood Mac. Fred saying Rumors over Tusk. Like, yeah, dude. Like, no, I guess that's everyone else's take, you know?
But Tusk You're just trying to be different.
I'm not trying to be different.
That like, smacked of a different for different sake pick. I gotta be honest with you.
I think people just, you know, if you're back in 1979, it was like one of the most hated on albums of all time. But once you give it 40 years or so.
You're sticking up for the little guy is what you're doing.
Exactly. I mean, I think they spent a lot of money on that album, the most of all time. They put a lot of hard work into it, and I think it shows off. Every album, or at least song on the album,
and came up with zero tracks. They were good.
Yeah, well, none of them were big singles, but a lot of them mean a lot to me. Okay. And that's like 20 songs that are good. So.
Also, Fred, throw that U in there. It's the British spelling. Come on, man.
Right. Rumors. Stevie Nicks is British, if you didn't know. Same with Lindsey Buckingham. No, they're from California.
Okay. Mick Fleetwood's British.
Yeah, Mick Fleetwood's British.
And then Chrissy McVeigh, and she sounds British.
She sounds British.
In those songs. And then Tell Me Lies, Tell Me Sweet Little Lies.
Yeah, that's Little Lies. Yeah, she's English. Yeah.
Boom!
Yeah, she's from the UK. I don't know if, John McVie's from
I believe England. He's an original Fleetwood Mac guy, so he would have to be, yes.
Okay. Did anybody else get disappointed when they found out their favorite singer was British?
Who are you thinking of?
Phil Collins. When Phil Collins, I learned that Phil Collins
You didn't
Collins
know
was,
Phil Collins was British?
When he sung, I was like, oh, that man's from, like, California. No. So from England.
I have a Phil Collins thing. You know the song Invisible Touch?
Great song.
Yeah, I thought it was Invisible Talk Show when I was a kid.
Invisible Talk Show.
Yeah. Okay. She seems to have that Invisible Talk Show.
Well, this is phenomenal. We need to get Weird Al on the horn for this to work that one up.
And speaking of Weird Al, you're daring to be stupid with that Tusk pick.
Ooh,
I don't know what the daring to be stupid is.
Herb grilling you with some 80s Weird Al references.
Somebody
there.
Got that Weird Al thing. Watch the video.
I got it. Vinny got it.
Yeah, you didn't.
No, I didn't get it. All right, let's get into the album talk here.
That's why.
Who wants to go first? Anyone want to be brave here?
I'll just go.
All right, let's go, Herb.
1993 brought along the best album of Tribe Called Quest. I know this is very debated about on Tribe Called Quest sites, but some mostly like Low End Theory, their album number two. I like their third album, which is Midnight Marauders. It has their best song overall for me, Electric Relay Excitation. If you listen to that song and do not groove and want to hear that again immediately, something's wrong with you. And we were discussing, Big Dave and I, he was here for CHGO Bulls. Lyrics to go. It's just a genius song. Firstly, Q-Tip with his rhyming skills. Secondly, his production skills. He was doing this in the late 80s, early 90s, where he's taking tracks and lyrics to go. He's taking the track from a song called Come Inside Me. Sorry. Minnie Riperton, who is the mother of Maya Rudolph, if you didn't know that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She was a great soul singer. She has this long, huge note that's just yelling. You know, if you know Minnie Riperton, you probably know Loving You. But she has this song in Come Inside of Me just... it's just a long note. I can't do it because she's very high. Q-Tip takes that, just the long note, and pretty much has that loop throughout the whole song. You don't know this until you watch the documentary they did a couple years ago, but Midnight Marauders, just, it's the perfect album.
You ever see Tribe Live?
I have not seen Tribe Live. Okay. I met Fife Dawg a couple times. He came to the Score Studios a couple times and interviewed with Lawrence Holmes before his passing. I think...
Sky Point.
2 years and 1 year before he died, he came into the Score Studios. But, like...
Was he a big sports guy or just...
Huge sports guy. I mean, one of his famous lines is, come with more hits than the Braves and the Yankees. And in Lyrics to Go, the song right here, he says a line that says, I always wanted this because a Shirley beats a scramble. I'm Jordan with the mic. Won a gamble.
It also came out. Oh, that's a Joe Ostrowski's intro, right?
Yeah,
I think that's what you put that in Joe's when you were doing the score with Lawrence. But also, I don't know why I asked that because also one of my favorite lyrics from this album is in "Keep It Rolling," where he goes skate on your crew like Mario Lemieux.
Yeah,
so there you go.
Yeah, Fife would always do some interplay with sports. Q-Tip, who is the lead guy, would also he said might be scrawny, got legs like Lube Rock. I forgot it. It's from not this album. It's from the Scenario album, the Serial song. But Midnight Marauders is my favorite by far Tribe album. Lil Wayne Theory is really good, but if you can't groove to Midnight Marauders, your ears are broken.
It's a great album. It's a fantastic band. I saw them post Fife, but they were fantastic live at Pitchfork back in like 2019. So Tribe Called Quest, great band, great rock, hip hop band.
And I believe it was released on the same day as 36 Chambers from Wu-Tang.
Oh shit, that's a great fucking day right there.
Yeah.
That's a good music day.
I think
it's
November 9th, 1993.
There you go. Yeah. Vinny, you got a number three album right here. You're going a little bit back in the catalog, back in the decades. What you rolling with?
1957, baby. Damn, all the way back. We're going to the blueprint of rock and roll right here, and that's Little Richard. This is Here's Ooh. Little Richard. This is a bit of a cheat on my part because this is technically just a compilation of some singles that had already been released and stuff like that. But, guys, there's a reason they call Little Richard the architect of rock and roll. This is it right here. This is everything you need to know, everything you need to build off of. It's right here. I mean, guys, it opens with Tutti Frutti. Maybe, you know, one of the five or ten best songs ever. Absolutely. Ready Teddy, Slippin' and Sliding, Long Tall Sally, Miss Anne, Rip It Up. It's all on here. This is as good as it gets right here.
The only one I knew off of it was Tutti Frutti.
Well,
so
you need to go home and listen to the whole thing. It's probably about 20 minutes long.
I was about to say.
So, you know, all these songs are about 2 minutes, so you'll get through it real quick. But, I mean, this is it, right? I mean, this is everything that rock and roll became started right here in this era when they transitioned from R&B into rock and roll, and a lot of it has to do with the personality, and you're not going to find a bigger, badder personality from the 1950s than Little Richard, a guy who obviously was living an unpopular lifestyle as well, and therefore earned him the nickname later on, obviously, of the King and Queen of Rock and Roll, which I always find is just tremendous. He gets all the titles.
Exactly.
He gets all the titles.
He's
all in one
either
there.
Way.
So, I mean, listen, you can't get better than this. He's a dude. He'd put his foot up on the piano and play the piano with his foot up on it. You know, he had a great band. You get honking on some saxophone in there too. Yeah, this is just tremendous. I'm sorry, I'm not going to have a lot to say about your guys' picks today because I am not familiar with these artists that you guys are going with, but there's nothing better. There's nothing better than putting on Little Richard. You will get sweaty in a hurry if you do that. Absolutely.
Are you like a Superman is the best superhero villain or a superhero of all time because he's like the first, because he's the blueprint? Is that your...
No, I mean, I'm a Marvel guy, not a DC guy, okay. So I get even nerdier when it comes to answering that question. But, but yeah, I mean, listen, when it comes to the 50s, Chuck Berry and Little Richard, you can't, it's what everything else sprang from. Everything you guys are talking about today and everything, all that 70s stuff that I talk about all the time, everything from then to now, you can't do it without those two guys.
Why Little Richard over Chuck Berry? Because I think probably most people would go Chuck Berry.
I think this album is more packed with quality.
Okay.
Chuck Berry had a few of these albums too in the 50s where they mashed all his singles together and stuff like that, but they were a little bit more strewn out. The B-sides to Chuck Berry's stuff maybe sometimes wasn't as high quality as the hits. Chuck Berry, I mean, I think, you know, in terms of playing the guitar, everything springs from there, so obviously you can't go wrong there. But yeah, I'm going with this one just because from an album sense, it's one of those ones where you know there's that Vince McMahon gif where the next thing, you're reacting a lot more. That's what listening to this album is like. You hear it, you go, oh, I can't possibly top this. And then you just do and do and do and do all the way down. Like I said, it's about 20 minutes long, so it's a nice listen if you haven't heard it all the way through.
You mentioned Long Tall Sally. That one's later on in the tracks. Little Yumper saying that's the song they played in Predator on the helicopter. So I've also never seen that movie, but some people have seen that movie. You know, other people who are not me.
Sure.
Sure. Pass that along. You seen the movie?
Yeah. Who hasn't?
All right. I have it. All right. Let's go to my album, my number third album of all time. I'm going with Alligator by The National. This is my most played band of all time on Last.fm. I've been tracking my music playing habits since 2018, and The National have been about 1,400 streams for me. They're my favorite band of all time. This is my favorite album of them. Is it their best album? Probably not. Boxer is more acclaimed.
Favorite of theirs.
It is my favorite of theirs, and it's kind
of
it's them coming into their own. It's their third album. Their first two, not really accessible. not going to lie, not the best. But here, they finally figure it out, and I really like just the energy on this album. It starts off with Secret Meeting, which is fantastic. Lit Up, which is the third track, is a very great song. And I realized, too, like, this is an album that I just play, and I don't really realize that I'm listening to it, and that's how I know all the words. I don't really know words to songs. I'm more of a music first and then lyric second. But this one I have just listened to so many times that the lyrics have now ingrained into my head. So this is an album that is just very easy listening to me. I don't know if it is easy listening.
It's like, not easy listening, yeah. But it's easy to listen to, yes. Is what you're saying.
I don't know if it's like the easy listening genre, but it is easy to listen to.
Gotcha.
Kind of like...
You guys covered easy listening yesterday.
Yes, yeah. We did.
It's like if Arcade Fire was from Cleveland. That's how... Or Ohio. That's how I would describe the National. There's also a song, All the Wine. If you guys want to listen to this album, maybe listen to All the Wine first, drink a bottle of wine, and then start at the first song.
Thing?
Yeah, and then finish it, and then you'll...
That usually improves just about anything you're listening to.
And especially this album. This album's fantastic. And I really feel like, you know, this would be their Born to Run, and I think they just hit their Tunnel of Love. I think you understand what I'm saying here.
That's not great,
right? But it's a great stretch of albums. You know what I'm saying? Like it's a really good stretch of albums.
Tunnel of Love means you're on the other side of the hill.
Yeah, well, that's every band gets there at some point. So running to it. At least you know, I would say 2005 to 2021 is their peak. So you're starting off with the best. So I think if you start here, at least it's a good place to start if you want to get into the National, like Vinny or Herb, who I know haven't listened to the National. So, you know, that's a great place to start for them. But any other thoughts here on our number three albums of all time? You're still searching for
that
something.
Label that they're on is Beggar's Banquet. Isn't that a Rolling Stones album?
Indeed it is.
Is it?
Okay,
oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're an indie band of the aughts, you know what I'm saying? So, they're one. That's one of the Beggar's.
Do they sound like Rolling Stones?
No.
Okay.
They sound, well... I don't know how they sound.
Do they sound like...
Maybe they sound like Ohio. Lawrence, you've heard that band.
Ohio,
how would you
like
describe
the
National? Like...
Brooding.
Yeah. Hmm. Brooding divorced dad rock.
Wow.
Even, yeah.
Boy, I can't. Boy, I can't wait
married.
To hear this.
He is very married, but there is a sense of like...
Is there a song called Can I Borrow a Feeling on it?
There you go.
No. What is that one?
Do you get that one?
No, I don't.
Ah, come on.
I'm sorry.
Catch up on your Simpsons, man.
Can I Borrow a Feeling?
Oh, that's a...
Sorry.
That's Milhouse's
dad.
Milhouse's
dad. Yeah,
yeah, okay.
No,
all right.
That's what it sounds. You said it sounds like divorced dad rock. I was like, Milhouse's dad.
Yeah. And someone said, the real Matt Lato said, Sean is a little bit tutti frutti. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. All right. Let's move on.
It's a phenomenal song.
I'm reading it
as a compliment.
I think he meant it as an insult.
Yeah.
But you know, take it.
Herb wins this round, so congrats, Herb. I think they're all great, you know?
Yeah.
I just haven't listened to Little Richard one. It will be great once I listen to it, so.
Yeah.
Have you watched his biopic?
No. Is it good?
Pretty good.
Have you seen it?
I wasn't aware there was one.
It's a long time ago. Leon, the actor, did it. If you watched Above the Rim, the main character in that, except for Tupac, Leon is Little Richard. It's just perfect. It's just a nice representation of who he was on and off the stage. And like Vinny said, it was very, like, imagine somebody doing it now. A little bit more celebrated. He was firstly in the black community and the church community and like coming out, not even come out. He was just flamboyant. He was just different. More in a box that you couldn't put him in. Like, hey, I'm gonna be me all day long.
Right.
Cause he started off singing gospel stuff. And then he's like, that's not me. I love the church, but my music is my music. Talking about sex, talking about different things. So, yeah, for 1957, Jesus.
Yeah. And screaming it from the rooftops, too.
And people ate it up.
Sounds like Katy Perry. Katy Perry also started
Dude,
as a church singer.
Come on, what are you
and now
doing?
She's a legend. I don't know. The best way to support CHGO is to download the PointsBet app and use code CHGO when you sign up. If you do that right now, you get two risk-free bets up to $2,000.
Now, I
That's
can actually
not
say
it.
This. Little Richard is rolling in his grave after that comment.
Oh, sky point.
Because he is currently dead.
That's not it. If you make a $15 or more first-time deposit,
because of that comment,
you'll
Katy
receive
Perry.
A free CHGO membership, which unlocks all of our web content, and you'll even get a free shirt of your choice from the CHGO locker, and Little Richard might come back from the dead as well if you use that. Wow. So it's a really great deal.
You apologize. Yeah, maybe.
That's $2,000 in free bets, a free CHGO membership, and a free t-shirt from the CHGO locker, all for making more than a $50 first-time deposit at PointsBet. If you have any questions, you can email pointsbet@allchgo.com, and we will help you out. PointsBet is your home for live in-play betting, and it just got even better. Introducing PointsBet's newest feature, the live NBA Same Game Parlay. For the first time ever, you can build the perfect live NBA Same Game Parlay only with PointsBet. You can combine your favorite bets anytime during the game, and if you want more, you can also boost your live Same Game Parlays. You can watch live, parlay live, and boost live with PointsBet. Online signup is available in Illinois. You can download the PointsBet app right now and register your account from start to finish, all from your phone. So what are you waiting for? Once the game starts, don't just bet. Live your bet life with PointsBet. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. And I need to mention that Strava CBD coffee is a game changer and has helped thousands of people to improve their overall wellness and quality of life. Strava delivers delicious, fresh roasted coffee, specialty coffee infused with organic, broad spectrum CBD. CBD from hemp doesn't make you high or hungry, but it does offer real benefits that can help you. It'll help you feel alert and focused without the jitters. It'll help you live your day more balanced with less anxiety and fewer aches and pains. And I've noticed this one, including CBD in your daily routine, can even help you enjoy a more restful sleep so you wake up feeling your best. I like to drink some coffee at night. I like to drink the decaf one with 20 milligrams of CBD. It helps me feel real nice and relaxed, ready to go to bed. And the best part too, Strava is all about quality. Everything is small batch, fresh and shipped straight to your door. Strava offers concentrated full-spectrum CBD tinctures for those looking for a more traditional CBD format with a powerful entourage effects of benefits. And CHGO listeners can save 25% off their purchase when you use code CHGO25. That's 25% off your entire order at StravaCraftCoffee.com when you use code CHGO25 at checkout. Discount coupon valid on non-subscription purchase only, one use per customer. And if you already love Strava like I do, you can subscribe and save with the Strava Coffee Club. With Strava Coffee, you're in control. You can save on your favorite coffees and have them automatically delivered to your home or office on your preferred schedule. Again, StravaCraftCoffee.com, and you could save 25% off your entire purchase using the code CHGO25. All right, guys, we mentioned it before.
Got through it.
Thank you. I think that was probably my best back-to-back.
Are you parched?
You know, thank you. I am parched. I'm going to ask a question and probably take a sip of water. Let's go into the doubleheader here. Surprising rain delay today, or weather delay. We get a doubleheader tomorrow. This is going to be the first of many for the Sox this season, and it will be nine-inning games tomorrow instead of the seven-inning game. I say nine-inning game, and Herb, I immediately see your head shaking. So do you like the fact that they're going back to nine-inning doubleheaders?
No. Like, if you're out there and listening or watching this, you've been to a nine-inning doubleheader, it is torture. I love baseball as much as the next guy. One time I went to this Cleveland Indians at the time versus White Sox doubleheader. The first game lasted 4.5 hours. We're like, we're going to go because it was my first opportunity to go to a doubleheader. Went to the second one, left after the second inning. I was like, I'm 5 hours invested at the same place, spending money left and right. Then last year, I went to the doubleheader versus Minnesota, which famously ended with Gavin Sheets walking us off.
Yes.
We weren't there that long. We're probably 5 hours total for two games to be completed and that walk-off home run by Gavin Sheets. That I don't know why you would change that, why you would change that rule. Like it, especially in a season where it's shortened, where pitchers need to be ramped up, nine-inning games, a doubleheader should be a thing of the past. We've introduced us to seven-inning doubleheaders. I don't feel like it is inauthentic. I don't feel like those wins are not the same. I just feel like if you're playing two games straight back-to-back, players don't want to be there all damn day. Media people don't want to be there all day. Neither the fans. So let's get the game over and let's get some results and move on.
Vinny, what do you think?
Yeah, preach. I mean, listen, as somebody who doesn't get the chance to go home in the second inning of game two, I absolutely think that from a selfish standpoint, they should be seven innings. Hey, why not five? But no, the...
whatever's good.
But yeah, I mean, seven innings just, it really didn't make sense, right? I mean, you're not watering it down so much that it doesn't feel regular, you know what I mean? It doesn't, like, the whole reason I hate that ghost runner rule in extra innings is it doesn't really feel like you're playing baseball the right way kind of thing. And, yeah, if you were only playing five innings, you'd probably have that kind of feeling. But seven seems to be a pretty happy medium there. And to go from nine to seven so that you can fit two in, you know what I mean? Like, when you're playing two nine-inning games in one day, it really feels like you're just forcing two nine-inning games into one day. Seven seems like, all right, we're able to get two in because we have made them seven innings apiece.
Right, and when Ernie Banks was proclaiming Let's Play 2, games are like 2 hours long.
Right.
So it was just four-hour games that were, you know, 18 innings. You try to get eight through 18 innings, and it does then bleed into 7.5 hours of a total day. And maybe now with the rules being implemented in the minor leagues that we'll talk about a little bit later, games are being shortened, so maybe that will lead to quicker games, so nine innings won't seem as much. But right now you're dealing with games that average 3 hours and 30 minutes, so it's just a ridiculous ask for fans to be there for two games back-to-back.
And it really felt like the last couple of years when they were playing seven-inning doubleheader games that, like, everyone loved it.
Right.
Like, the people involved were like, this is less arduous of a task. Obviously, the people who were watching it didn't have to commit 7-8 hours of their day to watching baseball, whether by choice or because you had to be there for your job, whatever that might have been. But, yeah, I mean, it really seemed like a no-brainer. And going back to it, I think the idea was – what it's like, well, we're not doing the same pandemic restrictions anymore. Let's get rid of everything we put in place to help with the pandemic. And I mean, I think the idea, the original explanation for the seven inning games was, let's just try to cut down on the amount of time that these people are in close quarters with each other because of COVID and what was going on. And I'm guessing that the reason that they went back to the nine innings was because that was a COVID rule from that era. So I definitely think they should be seven-inning games. Tony La Russa, as we will see, thinks that they should be seven-inning games. And it really seems like everybody besides the people who made that decision to go back to nine feels like they should have stayed at seven.
Yeah, and I'm honestly surprised to see Tony just because it does feel like he is such an old soul for baseball. He's just, you know, very traditional. But to see the quotes that he said that you gave us from April 13th, he said, "It's hard for me to understand why they got rid of seven-inning games with the shortened spring training, adding extra games, particularly shortened spring training. We are already pushing pitchers, especially to a place that's dangerous. Nobody is deep enough. Seven would be good." So not only is it part of, too, when, you know, Tony came into managing back in 1979, a lot of starters were going nine innings. You saw regularly people pitching 200 innings, especially starters. Now you're not seeing that. So I think Fred said it here, seven-inning doubleheaders are better than the extra-inning Manfred, man. No, that's not it. Nine-inning doubleheaders are dumb, even more this year with starters going five innings, right? So you're, instead of seeing starters go seven innings like they used to, you're seeing them go five. It just makes more sense. It's more of a condensed game, but you're also seeing still a true representation, like you were saying, of a game.
Well, and think about this. Last year you saw, especially in the first half of the season, every time the Sox had a doubleheader, they started Michael Kopech in a spot start usually, and the most innings that he pitched, if memory serves, was four. And then you're at the final three innings of the game. There you go. Well, now you're going to have your starting pitchers maybe go five, let's say five-ish because of where they are right now in their workloads. They only go five. Then you have four innings of relief. So Kopech pitching four innings last year in a spot start required fewer innings of relief than if your starting pitchers go five, a full five qualify for a win this time around. So, I mean, really, it's just kind of a no-brainer. Why wouldn't you have done the seven innings to save your bullpens? And I'm sure the White Sox are not the only team dealing with a very hard-worked bullpen right now that has been eating up so many innings with the workloads that the starting pitchers are at.
Yeah, let's go there because we do have a doubleheader tomorrow. We will see Dallas Keuchel and Jimmy Lambert supposedly pitch tomorrow for the Sox. We will also see Shane Bieber, and I believe it is Tristan McKenzie going for the Guardians in those two games. And there you go. I just saw Mike's question pop up on the screen. Who's starting tomorrow? Well, it's Dallas Keuchel and Jimmy Lambert and Shane Bieber and Tristan McKenzie. I know that Lucas Giolito can come off the IL. It seems that he's currently down in AZ pitching a sim game, so I don't think that he'll be back and ready for to be pitching tomorrow. So
Sunday
he's mm-hmm. gonna be back.
Yeah,
okay, all right. Well, so Sunday Lucas Giolito will be back, so you'll see Lambert and Keuchel tomorrow. But you do have a well-rested bullpen. You have 2 days off now, effectively. This should be a day where even if Lambert struggles, as long as Dallas Keuchel gives you five tomorrow, this bullpen should be fully operational. And the White Sox, as long as they hit, I think they could take two tomorrow.
And Dallas is pitching the first game of the two, correct?
Yes.
And that's probably the best thing because you're going to get at least five if you're getting Dallas Keuchel on the bump tomorrow. To have Jimmy Lambert go first, that would have been a big mistake. So, yes, I'm not a fan of nine-inning, but remember a couple years ago in 2020 where the White Sox, I think, played the last nine-inning doubleheader, I think it was versus the Cardinals, before they changed the rule to the seven-inning doubleheader. So there's time left in the season for insanity to get out of the way and let common sense rule with these seven innings, especially if you get people like Tony La Russa saying, hey, seven innings was good. So maybe the union and the MLB can come together and say, this is dumb. A lot of the nine-inning doubleheaders, it killed this team. Let's go to a seven-inning one this season. Let's vote on it and change it right now.
Because here's the thing, too, Sean, you bring up, it's been two off days, right? The bullpen should be well-rested for tomorrow. Okay, but what if the bullpen's got to throw eight innings tomorrow? Then what happens for Thursday? Well, and Friday and Saturday and Sunday. You know what I mean? It's that cumulative effect where you could get what you want out of Dallas Keuchel and Jimmy Lambert, and you could still have a ton of innings that need to be covered by the bullpen. It's basically like you threw eight pitchers in one nine-inning game because they all pitched on the same day. Now, obviously, the White Sox will be mindful of that and try to make it so guys are available for the next day. Maybe only one or two guys gets worked to the point where you wouldn't be able to use them in the day game on Thursday. But it's the cumulative effect, and I think it's something that we've been monitoring all season long when, I mean, heck, we were talking about it the second game of the season. You know what I mean? Where after opening day, there were two guys that they couldn't use the next day because of the way they were worked, and that's just going to keep going and going and going. That's the challenge of baseball. Every team's got to deal with it. You know, you play every day, but you sit there, and if you're the White Sox, you got to try to map out a situation in which you are not burning through that bullpen and wrecking yourself maybe for the Minnesota series more so than this Cleveland series.
Well, and that's where I think that competitive play is hurt on days where doubleheaders happen, because let's say the White Sox win that first game and they get, you know, five good innings from Dallas Keuchel, they get clean innings in the sixth, seventh, and eighth, and ninth, and then in that next game, Jimmy Lambert has a horrible outing. They didn't use Tanner Banks, and then they're just like, well, we're just going to use Tanner Banks for the rest of the game until we take the lead. Like, I just do think that teams, especially if they get behind in after winning the first game of a doubleheader, they do push, you know, less hard just because of not trying to overwork that bullpen.
House money theory.
I don't even know if that's the case so much as, like, you have to follow that plan, right? You have to follow that map, and you – let's put it this way. What is Tony always says this. He goes, you'd rather lose a game than lose a pitcher, you know what I mean? Or lose a player to injury usually is what he's talking about. But you don't want to overwork yourself to put yourself in a position where you're at a less positive chance to win in the games that come after that, because, like I said, one game out of 162 is nothing compared to when you start stacking up 3, 4, 5.
Thursday will be an important game, though, because that is another, you know, It's a very important day for Dylan Cease just because of the way he's been pitching so far this year. If they do overwork their bullpen, let's say they don't get a long start from Dallas Keuchel, they don't get a long start from Jimmy Lambert, Dylan Cease again being asked to have another long start. It's just with the injuries to Lucas Giolito and Lance Lynn, it is more pressure on Dylan Cease to be the guy in the rotation. And we saw, you know, him and Michael Kopech live up to that pressure in that Rays series, but it is, again, another opportunity where he has to be the guy, again, to help that bullpen possibly on Thursday.
And it's early, too. Like, so you're going to have these two games tomorrow, and then the next day you have a 12-10 start. So, it's taxing time at the bullpen. Hopefully Dylan is there initially and then goes home and gets some good sleep in the Cleveland hotel so he's ready to pitch, because that's an early, early start. I know it's a getaway day, but, yeah, I think Dylan is on his quest for AL Cy Young candidacy, so he will let nothing stop him. He's been our best pitcher by far so far, you know, by disqualification. But I think even when the Lance Lynn and Giolito come back, he's going to be still battling these guys for the supremacy of the ace of the staff.
Mm-hmm. I think you can look as a positive. You know, we've been following so closely. Oh my goodness, how long are these starting pitchers going to go? The good news is, as April moves along and turns into May, they're going to go longer and longer, and I think you should expect Dylan Cease to be able to throw six innings on Thursday. Heck, I think you should expect Dallas Keuchel to throw six innings tomorrow in game one of that doubleheader. Jimmy Lambert, we're not sure, obviously, because he was still building up when they had to call him up for emergency starting duty. But
I think it's probably just based on performance, too. Like, I mean, if he can give him five innings just because, you know, he hasn't given up a hit or too many runs, like, I think they'll push him to five if they can get him there.
Lambert.
Jimmy.
Yeah, I mean, it's about the number of pitches he's throwing, too. You know right. what I mean? It's how efficient you are. We saw with Michael Kopech his last start. You know, he throws 35 pitches in the first inning, and or that was Velasquez. He throws 25 pitches in the first inning, and you're like, I don't know. I don't know how long this is going to last, but he found it, and he became and he found his efficiency. You know, maybe you see Dallas or even Jimmy Lambert be in a similar situation. Like I said, Keuchel has been built up pretty much since the start, and I think he was disappointed that he only went as long as he did in his first start of the year. So I think he would probably tell you that he is capable of going six or seven, and heck, if he has a good day, maybe he does that, and that's that changes this entire script for when we're talking about the bullpen.
Well, he had the most pitches in a first outing for any White Sox this year. So, and I think I just did it again, making White Sox singular.
That's how I do it.
White
Sox. That's how I do it.
So he had 80 pitches in his first outing.
You be you, Sean.
Don't
let these people bully you or me.
He got up to 80 pitches in that game against the Mariners. So I would assume he's going to try to get to 90 or 100 because this is a less dangerous lineup than Seattle. Also with the doubleheader, I think they're just going to be more worried about the pitch count because if he's getting outs, they're probably just going to try to push him for as long as they can. Dylan got up to 91, so I wouldn't be shocked if Dylan gets up to 100 on Thursday. So, again, it is just mostly Lambert. If he can give them a quality four innings or five innings and he can be under 75 pitches or 80 pitches, I think that they'll take that from Jimmy Lambert, and you're looking at just, you know, those couple innings that they have to mop up.
And Jimmy Lambert should take a page out of Dallas Keuchel's book. Dallas Keuchel's a veteran. He understands that balls are not getting hit out of the ballpark as much this year. All he needs to do in the Cleveland air is pitch the contact. He's not out there trying to strike people out. Hit it. Hit it in my spot. Get quick, easy outs so your pitch count doesn't go up. That's what Jimmy Lambert needs to learn. He doesn't have blowaway stuff. Sometimes you just need a well-paced fastball, and then your secondary stuff needs to just be in the strike zone. Let them hit it as far as they can, except for that man, Jose Ramirez. Yeah, do not pitch to him.
Yeah, we're please. Avoiding him at all costs.
Intentional walk every time up. Give him the Bonds treatment.
He said 16 times. He's fine if he walks 16 times in this.
Let Franmil Reyes have the series of his life.
Series. Yeah, I'm fine if he has the series of his life. We've seen Jose Ramirez have a couple series of his life, and he's already red hot, so I'd avoid him. But you're right. I mean, Lambert's fastball was working very well in his last start. If he continues that, and as long as he has one breaking ball, I think he can be effective enough to give the White Sox what they're looking for. Let's talk a little bit about this pitch clock, because the pitch clock in the minor leagues is shaving 20 minutes off minor league games while scoring is the same. We are going to see this introduced into the major leagues in 2023. This is from Jeff Passan's column in ESPN. He said more than one third of minor league games over the 3-day sample with the clock ended in less than 2 hours and 30 minutes, including one game that finished in 1 hour and 59 minutes, which I think Mark Burley was probably pitching in, and another in 2 hours. 27% of games fell within 2 hours and 30 minutes to 2 hours and 40 minutes, nearly three times the percentages in 2021. Only 15% of games exceeded 3 hours compared to 52% of last season with no timer in place. So, Herb, I know that you had a real big tradition while you worked at the Score, whether it be White Sox games, whether it be Cubs games, but you tweet out the time of game after every single game of running the board. And consistently, you'd see 3:06, 3:26, and then it'd be up to 4 hours sometimes. What do you think when you hear baseball being played in 2 hours and 30 minutes to 2 hours and 40 minutes?
Beautiful. I love it. It's the way baseball is supposed to be played. I think, as I haven't asked a hitter about this, but I think hitters get more nervous when you get the ball and throw it. Mm-hmm. It shows confidence that you know what you're throwing, where you're going to throw it, and the hitters are like, okay, this guy's got a rhythm going, so I need to break this up. Having a pitch clock, I'm not 100% in favor of, but I'm 100% in favor of pitchers realizing their power is speed, getting the batters in and out, and getting the ball and throwing it. The only thing I worry about with pitch clocks is the ump show. Umps taking over. Like we saw the other day in a LSU SEC game where they struck a guy out who had two strikes just because he was taking too much time outside the batter's box. But they had already given him a warning, but like, I could see Angel Hernandez ruining this. Luckily, Joe West is retired now. I could see guys just being bad. Tom Hallion, just like the ump showtime. So I'm in favor of games being sped up. I'm not in favor of the mechanism that they're using to use a pitch clock. I think it's unnatural to use a clock in baseball. I think just let people do what they need to do. But I feel like if I was ever given a seminar to pitchers, like if I'm up there and you're just getting the ball and throwing it, I have no time to think about your arsenal. I have no time to think. I just have to react right now. And so that's advantage pitcher.
Well, and that's part of what made Mark Burley so effective. He was throwing at such low velocity and his stuff wasn't, you know, eye-popping. He didn't have this great breaking ball like, you know, Dylan Cease or Michael Kopech or Matt Brash. Like, you know, you're never going to see a Mark Burley throwing a slider like Matt Brash. But what he did have was he was always releasing from the same release point. So guys couldn't tell coming out of the hand what it was. And he was always working quickly because at this, you know, breakneck pace where guys couldn't get comfortable, he would always just be throwing balls at them. And he wouldn't be able to tell, you know, what was coming out of your hand, and you couldn't get in a rhythm. You know, you have this time to guess, oh, maybe I'm sitting fastball, or gear up like fastball, 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 sitting dead red, as they always say. You don't really have that time to think. And something that Clayton Kershaw has done so far, he's top 10 in pace this year, and he has just been working at such a quicker speed than he's ever worked before. And it's now like if Mark Burley had Clayton Kershaw's stuff, it's impressive. Yesterday he had a really good game until, you know, the sixth inning came around and guys started sitting on his fastball, but he really wasn't predictable throughout that entire game. So I do think that, you know, that concern about hitters possibly being thrown off, I'm fine with that, especially if they're going to be deadening the ball. I think that it is all about pace of play, and I think if they increase pace of play, it's going to increase enjoyment of watching the game for fans.
Yeah, I would say that there's probably another side to that argument, which is, you know, don't underestimate how important routine is to pitchers. And there might be some pitchers out there that got to relearn how to do what they do and to be effective doing it if they're not going to be able to be in complete control of, you know, how they get ready for pitches. And, you know, you see the chess match all the time of you know, a batter stepping out of the box or a catcher asking for time, that kind of thing. That's going to go away, hopefully. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm in favor of the pitch clock. I'm all about, you say 2.5 hour game, I'm like, sign me up. But yeah, I mean, don't assume that every pitcher is going to be able to turn into Mark Burley. Mark Burley was effective because he was Mark Burley. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of pitchers that are not able to do that and work that quickly. That being said, you're absolutely right. That he works quickly is usually always a compliment or always a, ooh, he's hard to hit because he works quickly kind of thing. And so when you're talking about the hitters having to face him, that's something that they've got to figure out, absolutely. But, you know, you also want to make sure these guys are hitting the zone. You know what I mean? You make these pitchers speed up their process. Mm-hmm. They might not be able to locate quite as easily as they do normally, and you're seeing a bunch of walks, and that drags the game on too. I'm happy to hear that those are the results, but obviously there are some big differences between how games are managed in AAA versus how games are managed at the major league level. And I think the main thing that has dragged games out has been all the pitching changes, if those are still able to run wild, and I know they've got the three batter rule in there, which has probably helped with that, but it'll be interesting to see, definitely. But I don't know if it would be a cure all in terms of the quality of the game or the quality of play or who would have the upper hand or what.
Imagine a Francona doubleheader game where he had just the one batter minimum rule. Oh my goodness.
I think I've been to him.
He's just switching righty, lefty, every at bat. It's a 5 hour nine in the game. Yeah. Ugh,
and I'm glad too that I really do like the implementation of that rule as well. The three batter minimum. I think that's moved the game along fairly quicker than, you know, all the loogie stuff where you're putting in guys to face a right hander, especially with the way lineups were staggered.
I think it makes I think what so many people are afraid of with these rule changes are that it like takes the chess match thing out of the game. It takes the strategy away. I think it just makes it different, right? I mean, now you have to strategize two batters ahead rather than being in every single moment. And I think that adds to the chess match adds to the strategy of it, because you're not just making a pitching change to get the next guy out. You have to make a pitching change to get the next two or three guys out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like, you know, we talk about the strategy and pitch clock. Like, there is no strategy really that is changing. You have now pitch com, which is being introduced, which you can now flash signs even before the pitcher has the ball. So, I mean, communication and getting pitches is quicker. This should be an operation that can, you know, be adapted easily by major league players. And one thing too, I like that they're pushing this into the minor leagues now to get these guys ready. And you talked about routine, like, you know, you can introduce this into the minor leagues because not a lot of those guys have their routines just of yet, and it hasn't changed the game. Jeff has this in his article. Scoring was essentially flat, with the non-test set yielding 5.13 runs and hits, 16.1 hits per game, while the clock featured 5.11 and 15.9 hits. So you're really not seeing a difference between the runs and the hits. Again, I probably messed up that reading there, but it used to be when there was no pitch clock, 5.13 runs per game. Now it's 5.11. So scoring and hitting has not been changed. And I did want to use this as well. That's kind of the differential of how games were played after the rules were enforced, before the rules were enforced. You see all that red on the left side of that graph, just showing the spike of games being played quicker, under 2 hours and 44 minutes. Over 30% of those games were finished in 2 hours and 30 minutes and 2 hours and 44 minutes. So 30% of those games, I will take that. And if you're taking, you know, all those times under as well, and you know, you see up to 25% for 2 hours and 15 minutes to 2 hours and 29 minutes. If they can make it as quick as a college basketball game is played, more people will watch this game, and that is great to see. So I'm all for this rule change right here.
Me too. And with major leagues, remember they have a minute 40 for commercial breaks. So minor leagues might be a little different. So you'll add probably like 30 seconds to each break. The minor leagues, I don't know how much their breaks are. So, yeah, it'll be quicker. Probably won't be 2:30, but under three-hour games consistently, I think we're all for that, right?
And I should, yes, I'm all for that, and I also should mention, too, what the pitch clock is set at. So with no one on the mound, pitchers have 14 seconds to pitch when someone is on the mound. When no one's on the bases, they have 14 seconds to pitch, and then when someone is on base, they have 18 seconds. So
okay.
Yeah, right now Clayton Kershaw, he works around like 20 seconds.
And so if you don't,
he's moving fast.
If you don't get it,
he's top 10.
You get a ball called against you.
Yes, you get a ball called against you. And there was one player who had 3 strikeouts in the minor leagues on 8 pitches, because the guy took too long in the box and got a called strike against him. So that's a weird immaculate inning right there. So we might not see immaculate innings. We might see less than immaculate innings with 3 Ks and 8 strikes. But interesting developments that we'll see. And I'm all for most of the rule changes that have happened. 3 batter minimum, this pitch clock. And I think the only one I'm against is going back to 9-inning games. Let's go back to 7-inning doubleheaders, and I'll be a fan of that.
Do you like big bases?
Big bases haven't affected the game, and as long as less guys are getting injured, I'm fine with that. So
they're funny, though. It's a funny rule change.
Are they bigger?
Yes. Have you noticed? I can't tell. I'm sure they're fine.
When they put them next to each other, I'm like, God damn, that base is huge. But yeah, no one
can't looking tell from the seats.
Yeah, the stands is like, oh my God, how much more base is that?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's closer to the plate, so you should be getting more infield singles, like Timmy did the other day.
But he was beat out still. I mean, like, bigger bases.
Not that one. There was one he did the beginning of the game where he hit the ball to third base. And
I was thinking the Adam Engel one, where Adam Engel had a great base running play. We're going from second to home, and Timmy just barely missed out beating that one to first base. And those are the bigger bases, if you could see them.
We can only see
them. They're not on the broadcast. It's all right. You don't have to put them on the broadcast. They're a little bit bigger. They're like a little bit bigger, 2 inches. Each
monstrous
way. They're pretty unnoticeable or unrecognizable probably to the naked eye, but if you enjoy CHGO, one way to help us continue to grow is to download the PointsBet app and use code CHGO when you sign up. Not only are you going to get 2 risk-free bets up to $2,000, but if you make a $50 or more first-time deposit, you'll receive a free CHGO membership, which unlocks all of our web content, and you'll even get a free shirt of your choice from CHGO locker. If you have any questions, you can email pointsbet@allchgo.com. we will help you out. In case you missed it, online signup is available in Illinois. You can download the PointsBet app right now and register your account from start to finish, all from your phone. You'll be signing up with the fastest sportsbook, easier than ever, so you can start living your bet life in just seconds. So what are you waiting for? Once the game starts, don't just bet. Live your bet life with PointsBet. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. And we do want to mention CHGO. You can take advantage of that partnership deal that we have with PointsBet using code CHGO, depositing $50 on your first time, and you can get the free CHGO membership But yes, right over there.
No, not over Vinny.
If you just want to become a member of CHGO, go to allchgo.com. You will be getting the podcast, the pregame shows, the postgame shows, and all of our live shows for free. But members, if you become a member, you'll get a free shirt when you sign up. All of our shirts are shipping out real quick and fast now. We have the merchandise coming in and going out of our Denver offices, so you will get a shirt fairly quick once you order them. So once you become a member, you get a free shirt of your choice from the CHGO Locker. You also get access into our members-only Discord. We call that the CHGO Lounge. And you get access to premium written content by all of our beat writers, Vinny Duber being one of them. He does have a free article up right now on the website about the mysticism of Tony La Russa. But for, you know, post-game recaps, stuff like that, you know, if Luis Robert has a big day, those will be behind a paywall, and members can view that and view Vinny's writing about the on-day, the daily going-ons of the Chicago White Sox. Goings on.
Yeah.
Is that it?
That's how grammar, that's how we do things in the grammar world.
White sock.
Absolutely.
AllCHGO.com is where you become a member.
That's good stuff. I think my guy Jimbo said, bigger is not always better. Come on, Jimbo. It is always better.
What is he referring to? Oh, the bases.
The bases being bigger. And I think somebody else said, I like big bases, and I cannot lie.
That's so true, Sir Mix-a-Lot, right there.
It was Mike.
And there was some shrinkage going on from Greg Miller. I was in the pool. let's go to our next topic, and we're talking about the projected 26-man roster for the Chicago White Sox once May comes along. When May comes along, we will be going from 28-man rosters to a 26-man roster, the normal 26-man roster. And Luis Robert's butt cheeks wanted to tell you that the mystical ardor is pretty good. So you want to thank Luis Robert's butt cheeks, or you want to just pass on that opportunity?
I'm very happy that everyone's checking it out. I am afraid that thank you would be grabbed as an audio drop
never.
And used to death. So I am going never. To avoid stepping in that trap.
I love Luis Robert's butt cheeks. What? Someone said I was.
She's waiting to go ahead and click record on that one. So,
but let's move into the 26-man roster debate, because Lucas Giolito will be coming off the IL soon. He just pitched a simulated game, and like our producer Natalie mentioned earlier, he'll be coming off the IL come Sunday. You also have. I was going to say Adam Eaton, different guy. AJ Pollock coming off the IL soon. He did not go on the paternity absent list. He just had a kid just lined up that he was going on the IL and had a child at the same time, from my understanding.
He was expected to go on the paternity list and then got
the
injured.
Overrated.
Got injured, and the injured list is a lengthier stay, so they said, why don't you work on your on your hamstring while you get to spend time with your kid?
So if he has a kid in like September again, you know, he can use his paternity leave.
I mean, it's not impossible.
It's not impossible.
Really hard
it could
for him
happen.
To have a kid in September.
Yeah, I mean
it would be impossible.
I mean, like if he's we're moving on.
I mean, he can, you know.
Let's go
guys,
talk
math. Guys, math. Come
and
on.
Infidelity, but like, too.
Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking.
Wow,
I didn't want to bring that up.
That's what he was
but I mean, it is possible. It might be unmoral, but it might be possible. But let's go into the 26-man roster.
Whatever.
The 13 pitchers that will supposedly be on the roster at the start of May. You got Dylan Cease, Lucas Giolito, Michael Kopech, Dallas Keuchel, Reynaldo Lopez, Vince Velasquez, Liam Hendricks, Aaron Bummer, Kendall Graveman, Jose Ruiz, Bennett Souza, Tanner Banks, and Kyle Crick. Lance Lynn is not on that list right there. We'll probably see Tanner Banks be sent down once Lance Lynn is ready to go. But those are the 13 pitchers projected to be on the roster come May. What's the stroke for your four?
Well, I would say you've got a couple of names that you might want to include on there.
Yeah.
Two relief pitchers currently on the injured list in Joe Kelly and Ryan Burr.
Oh, that's true.
Who knows how quickly either of those guys will be off the injured list. But Joe Kelly, I think Rick Hahn told us, you know, might be doing a AAA rehab stint by the end of this month, which is coming right up. So I think Joe Kelly, you know, the last we heard about him, he's still working in Arizona, still, you know, and getting that going. But Rick Hahn said that maybe by the end of the month he would be on a rehab assignment. And Tony La Russa said that might not need to be very long just because of kind of the veteran experience that Joe Kelly has.
And something that Joe Kelly brings, too, he's good at both righties and lefties. So you could probably see one of those left-handers go down. Maybe it would be Tanner Banks just because they do have length in Reynaldo Lopez. And with Lance Lynn coming back, they'll probably have a little bit more time as well. There's also the question of Johnny Cueto coming from KPW and Mike Messenger. Is it Mein Gassener?
There it
Mike
is.
Mein Gassener. Okay, there you go. But he's asking about Johnny Cueto, too. So if we're looking back at those 13 players, Kyle Crick has struggled a little bit. Matt Foster has two options. What do you think, if Cueto's ready come May, who do you think's going down there out of the 13 men?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Kyle Crick, you mean, or a guy who has multiple options. I mean, Johnny Cueto more than likely will be making the major league roster. If he's just horrible in the minor leagues, yeah, they have no fault there. They can just say, okay, here's your money, get out.
By May 15th, they can cut him.
Yeah, so I assume that Johnny Cueto will be making the major league roster. So, yeah, one of those guys at the back end of the bullpen, even though Jose Ruiz has done well for himself. I mean, if we got Johnny Kelly. Cueto coming through and Joe Kelly coming through, and then Ryan Burr coming through, some of those guys at the end of the list might have to see a Charlotte or have a DFA on their list.
Ryan Burr, I mean, like he was on the team last year. I don't know if he will be called up immediately to the MLB. I could see him being sent down to Charlotte.
Perhaps. I think it depends on the need. But, I mean, I think when you talk to about like a depth chart,
yeah,
I mean, he's probably ahead of some of the guys that were on that list if you're just going from scratch as of a few weeks ago. But, you know, it's about the need, and we might see a need develop as it so often does throughout the season.
Could we see the list again of the pitchers? Just because I do think that Ruiz, now that the fact that he's added a changeup, that makes him more valuable.
He's out of options too, remember.
Yeah, so I'd honestly move him up. So Bennett Souza,
but
probably.
He has to stay in. Bennett Souza or Tanner Banks have to stay on the team, correct?
Why?
No.
If we're getting lefties?
Well, you got Bummer.
I mean, just one then.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest weakness of this team. Yeah. But, I mean, Kyle Crick can go down. Kyle Crick does have options, and he's been a little bit shaky. He is mostly slider-heavy, too. So,
and then, remember, Vince Velasquez might get DFA'd. You know, if it's only $3 million. It's a drop in the bucket. If he pitches like he pitched in the first inning the other day and continues to do that, the first game also, he really wasn't that great. The results were good. I could see a straight Velasquez-Cueto trade or swap.
Okay, so we could see Velasquez possibly go down, Cueto come up, and then Lance Lynn probably replacing Tanner Banks right there. So that would be the two injury moves, and then there is still the question of Ryan Burr, like you keep bringing up.
Lynn's a ways off, though. I think you're talking about the first few days of June for Lance Lynn in terms of a target. Now, that being said, he says he's ahead of schedule on his rehab, and that's fine, but yeah.
Because they said 6 to 8 weeks, but they did say he was ahead of schedule for both him and Lucas, even though I think Lucas was a little bit behind schedule if he was able to come off the IL on the 19th.
So Rick told us, I believe the day of the home opener, he just kind of mentioned when they were targeting Lance to be back and said early June. Okay. We talked to Lance shortly thereafter, and he said he's ahead of schedule. But, you know, the doctor's got to tell him what he can do and where he is in that recovery from a physical standpoint, from a medical standpoint. So he had yet to throw off a mound, obviously, when he talked to us. And it's, you know, he said that was going to be the determining factor in how quickly along he could move this. But I think the White Sox are prepared, at least, to be without him for the first 2 months of the season.
All right, and then let's go to the hitters here. We got 13 hitters that will probably be on the roster come May. Grandal and McGuire will be your catchers. Abreu, Harrison, Anderson, Berger. Infielders, you also got Jimenez, Robert, Pollock, Vaughn, Engel, and then Sheets out in the outfield, and Leury being your utility man. No injuries really outside of Yoan Moncada, so that really makes Jake Berger the weak man on that list out of the 13, or you guys have a different weak man on that list?
I mean, man signed for 3 years, so he can't be sent down. Lurie can't be sent down. But, yeah, Jake Berger has options. He has no position to play when Yoan Moncada comes back. It's better for him to get everyday play down there in Charlotte than this sporadic, maybe not playing at all up here in the major leagues. I think any player would rather play in AAA than just be sitting on the sidelines in the major leagues.
Yeah, so I see that you have sent Danny Mendick down for when Pollock comes back there based on that list.
Yeah, I think that makes the most sense.
I would agree that he probably would get squeezed, you know, when it goes from 28 to 26.
Playing time right
now.
Yeah,
but I mean, hey, Berger could hit himself into a roster spot, but I do think that, you know, Moncada coming back would obviously make a bigger factor in that than anything. So, yeah, they've got some you've got some decisions to make.
Well, and I think, too, like Harrison proves that he could play a pretty good third base. So I think that you would just have the ability then, or well, I mean, Berger has also proved that he could play a good third base. So you'd have two third basemen on the roster in Moncada and Berger. And Harrison has been covering for Berger whenever he's not in the lineup while Moncada's out. So I think you could have two third basemen and then two second basemen in Garcia and Harrison. So I think it just balances out nicely because Mendick, he's a very flexible piece. We saw him play right field last year, but the bat just doesn't play, and Berger's bat has been phenomenal so far. So I think that he has played himself into a roster spot, but maybe the idea of him getting swings in AAA would be more valuable.
Not only that, we don't really know when Yoan Moncada is going to be back at this point. We talked to Tony about it the other day, and he said, you know, there's still something that he feels when he tries to make a move playing defense, and until he stops feeling that completely, they're not even going to put a timetable on it.
Right, so maybe it's May, maybe it's June. Hopefully it's not June.
I wouldn't go saying doomsday quite yet, but it's unknown at the moment. We'll put it that way.
So that's all the news that we got today on the off day for the Chicago White Sox. Doubleheader tomorrow starting at 1:10, and then the final game, I think it happens 30 minutes after the first one wraps up. So that's your White Sox day tomorrow. So that's going to wrap it up for the CHGO White Sox podcast. I got one more question, I guess. There was another question. Apparently Dave Stewart put out a thing for an expansion team in Nashville. Someone was asking if they're doing Nashville expansion teams, what would the name be of the Nashville expansion? Should we save that for tomorrow, or you guys got thoughts?
How about the Nashville Hot Chicken?
Nashville Hot Chicken.
There you go.
Nashville Fried Chicken.
Yeah, Nashville Hot Chicks, and then C-H-I-X.
So that way they have the same problem that we do, whether determining whether a singular is chick or chicks.
Yeah, but gotcha. you're referring to the chicken, but also people can, you know, say it could be chicks.
Then right. You go. You got it right there.
Sexist thing. Yeah.
Chicks dig the long ball.
Yeah, and we can
it's right there.
Combine
it's right there for the waiting.
The Chicago teams, because like, you know, chick, I think you have of a smaller chicken, so kind of like a smaller bear. You got the Cubs, and then you got the chick.
A little baby chicken. Yes. That would be the mascot.
And there's a hot chick.
There's plenty of room right there on the lakefront of Nashville. You could put them right next to Nissan Stadium where the Titans play. Have a nice backdrop of the Nashville skyline, which is made of mostly hotels.
Yeah, and there's the Eye of Sauron building, which is like very much like Lord of the Rings, is it?
Yeah.
You're going to reference Eye of Sauron and then not know what it's from?
Yeah, I don't know. all my friends, I've gone to Nashville 3 times, and they're like, oh, that's the Eye of Sauron building. And I'm like, oh, sick.
You got to whiteboard this for me, somebody.
I've never seen Lord of the Rings.
Oh, okay.
I cannot whiteboard it for you, but in Nashville, the tallest building, I believe, looks like, and I think it's the AT&T building, looks like the Eyes of Sauron, which is like this triangular diamond shape thing. That's all I could, that's how I can describe the building. So that's it. That's going to do it for the CHGO White Sox podcast. For Vinny Duber, you can follow him on Twitter at Vinny Duber. You can follow Herb Lawrence at Ecknerwall23. And you can follow me, Sean Anderson, at Sean_W_Anderson. Thank you, everybody, for watching on YouTube live with us. And we will see you tomorrow for the White Sox post-game show after game 2 between the Guardians and Sox wrap up. We will talk to you tomorrow, and go Sox.